This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, forget the scene setter looking at the rest of the morning here on Montana Talks. Let's look at the week ahead. This is pretty exciting. We're going to be breaking out of the studios here once again, traveling across the state, getting out on patrol, as I like to talk about it. Well, let's start with today. Of course, today, coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour of the show, I was able to sit down with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute. We talked about the state budget, looking back on the legislative session. Okay, how much did spending actually go up? Did it go up 2%, far below inflation and population gains, as one side of the Republican caucus has suggested? Or did it go up a massive 18%, as the Freedom Caucus has charged? Kendall Cotton weighed in. Great conversation, talking about the state budget, spending across the state, taxes, and more. We're going to feature that conversation here in the 6 o'clock hour of the show. And then coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the show, of course, Evelyn Pyburn back with us. Evelyn with the Big Sky Business Journal. We like to get back to business, focusing on business news every Monday morning, so that'll be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. And then after that, we'll have the phone lines open for the rest of the morning. Obviously, we're going to talk about this horrific stabbing of this Ukrainian woman back on the East Coast that's getting zero attention from the liberal media mob, or all those people with those Ukrainian flags in their social media profiles. For some reason, they don't care about this young woman from Ukraine either. It's media silence and social media silence from the folks on the left. We'll hit that story and so much more. And then later in the week, of course, John Jackson, the Joker from X, with us on Tuesday. Wednesday's pretty wide open for now. Thursday, I would be broadcasting live from the Montana State Capitol in Helena. So, hey, those of you in the capital city, those of you that will be in Helena that day, come see me, third floor fan window. We've broadcast from that location before. We're going to do it again. David Noble will actually be covering the early morning hours Thursday while I get set up from the capital, and then I'll be live 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Thursday. Friday, similar kind of deal. I'll be set up actually from the University of Montana in Missoula. Show location, I'll let you know the final show location, but most likely we'll be either on or near the University of Montana campus for their big military alumni reunion. And, of course, Thursday is the 9/11 Memorial. I'll have the honor of speaking at the 9/11 Memorial at the Montana Capitol Thursday morning after this show, and then we'll head over to the University of Montana for their 9/11 Memorial, where we're going to honor the fallen and some who gave their lives 20 years ago for this country. Will be remembered at that 9/11 ceremony in Missoula on Thursday afternoon. That's a big part of why we're going to be there for the military alumni reunion and a live show from the campus on Friday. And then Friday night, Warrior Taste Fest in Bozeman, benefiting Warriors in Quiet Waters. And then, of course, a big football Saturday, of course, for both Bozeman and Missoula. So that's a look at the week ahead. All right, our conversation with Kendall Cotton, CEO of the Frontier Institute, coming up right after this. And then, like I say, phone lines will be open for pretty much for half of the 7 o'clock hour and then the entirety of the 8 and 9 o'clock hours this morning. A lot of stuff to get to here on this Monday.
Substance use disorder and addiction is so isolating. And so, as a Black woman in recovery, hope must be loud. It grows louder when you ask for help and you're vulnerable. It is the thread that lets you know that no matter what happens, you will be okay.
When we learn the power of hope, recovery is possible. Find out how at startwithhope.com. Brought to you by the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, Shatterproof, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad, how do airplanes fly? What's in this box? Is this tree good for climbing? How are babies made? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Talking to them about gun safety in your home is a good first step, but you can do more. Always keep your guns locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by nFamily Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Put your phone on D&D. That means that you're not disturbed when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe. Please don't always sing with me. So put your phone on D&D. That means that you're not disturbed when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safe. Please don't always remember this beat.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Smokey the Bear.
Smokey.
And you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful. It's the least that you can do.
Just as much as I don't play with matches. Don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Addressing the state budget debate, Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, had a guest opinion column that ran in several of the Lee newspapers all across Montana, and I've gotten to share some of his insight in the past looking at the state budget debate, especially in the immediate aftermath of Montana's legislative session. So look forward to catching up with Kendall here today. First off, Kendall, great to have you back on Montana Talks. Before we get to the state budget, I think you saw the very same piece that I shared from the Daily Interlake in Kalispell. Look at this. Flathead County Commissioners, all three Republicans, I should note, they are lowering property taxes by hundreds of dollars for residents. And basically what they're saying is, hey, we've got a lot of growth, which means we've got a lot of growth in revenues. So we are going to lower property taxes. But why is this such a shocking concept for so much of the state of Montana?
Well, I think that why it's shocking is because most of our government is addicted to excessive spending. I mean, we have a spending problem. And the interesting thing is that the Flathead County Commissioners have actually been great on spending over the last 10 years. They've actually kept spending restrained, growing less than population and inflation over the last 10 years. And so because they've been fiscally responsible, they're able to cut taxes.
Yeah, in this article, and I was, frankly, I'm glad the Daily Interlake actually printed it in full, is, and then they shared the data that was given to them by Flathead County. I mean, they point out the very fact that, okay, you have more houses being built, you have more businesses going in. That means the local city and county governments have more money coming in, not less. So that means that existing property taxpayers should not be forced to pay more. In fact, they should pay less. But yet that's not the message that you get in Missoula or in Bozeman and, frankly, in other parts of the state of Montana. They never want to tell you how much more of your money they're getting because they just want to spend it all. They don't want to actually allow you to keep more of your own money.
That's exactly right. You know, I'd encourage listeners to go to our website, frontierinstitute.org. Go check out our Real Local Budgets report from 2024. We detail the growth of local city county budgets across the state, and we compare them. And you'll be able to go and see how Flathead County measures up to a county like Gallatin, and you'll see a stark difference. Spending in Gallatin County is going up like a hockey stick, while Flathead County has been fiscally responsible, and I think you see the difference in the tax burden.
That's right. And somehow those Democrat Gallatin County commissioners, they weren't able to lower your property taxes if you're listening to KMMS right now, but they sure figured out a way in the budget to boost their own salaries, didn't they? All right, before we get to the state budget debate, I feel like we got to talk a little bit more about local government spending, county government.
this. City government spending, county government spending here. And really, we are starting on a... It's always nice when you can start on a positive note and on a good note. And this great news out of Flatick. Yeah, right? Isn't it nice to have some good news on the property tax front for a change? Kendall Cotton with us here. So, yeah, Kendall, this Daily Interlake article... You never read these numbers. You never hear these numbers reported in most media outlets. But they're quoting here County Administrator Pete Melnick, and a great guy, by the way. I ran into him and his wife at that Western Congressional Caucus summit a couple of weeks ago. He's a retired Fullbird 06 from the Coast Guard, so it was fun hearing more of his story here. But he shared these numbers, and the Daily Interlake actually reported it here. Total property tax revenue increased to $53.6 million, a $2.6 million bump from last year, and a $5.2 million bump from fiscal year 2024. And new properties coming onto the tax rolls made up over half of those increases. So, you know, taxpayers, property taxpayers, are going to see, you know, hundreds of dollars in decreases on their bills and their property taxes. And again, we need to highlight this because most city governments never want to tell you how much more money they are getting right now because they don't want to have to lower your taxes. They want to spend every single dime of it and more.
That's right. You know, there's no free lunches in government, Aaron. And a lot of our local governments want to treat government just like that. Like the money's free, but it has to come from somewhere. And at the end of the day, all government spending, in one way or the other, has to be paid for by the taxpayer. You know, one of the things we're seeing in Missoula County, for instance, in their budget proposal this year, where, by the way, they're raising property taxes, you know, they are asking for taxpayers to pick up the tab for paying for programs that were funded by federal grants that now President Trump and DOGE have rolled back. So now when the federal money runs out, the taxpayers are on the hook for paying for this stuff. And, you know, even federal money isn't free. It's all got to be paid for by the taxpayer.
That's a great point. You know, I was talking with our friend David Noble earlier this morning, and, you know, good job on his part. He was praising Yellowstone County's commissioners because they reduced taxpayer funding for the art museum in Yellowstone County. And David made a good point. I didn't even know my taxpayer dollars were going to an art museum. Why don't they get fundraising support for something like that? Why, when Yellowstone County needs a new jail, And they need school security in their schools, why are we funding an art museum? And then on a related note, Tom Burnett, former legislator out of Gallatin County, he sent me an email earlier this week. Public libraries. The visits to public libraries in Montana are down. Over the last 10 years, a 30% decline in visits to public libraries.
All right, let's hold it right there. Back more with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, right after this.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
And a wolf?
Oh, a wolf.
Ooh! What about the tiny dog?
What?
Cat.
Aww.
Owl.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say?
Whale.
To the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive. Like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian, who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it. I got the job. I can't believe it.
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom,
I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project.
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nemitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, one of America's greatest natural resources is our grazing lands. And this past week, ranchers from across the U.S. gathered in Billings, Montana for Grazing Expo 2025, hosted by the Montana GLCI in partnership with the Wyoming GLCI. Now, Dr. Jeff Goodwin, director of the Center for Grazing Lands and Ranch Management at Texas A&M University, set the tone for the Grazing Expo with his message, Grazing Management, Generation of Change.
You know, it was an opportunity really to just talk about how, or actually what has changed in the grazing management scene over the last 100 years, right? How has the weather changed? How has that impacted our ability to have a productive and efficient grazing enterprise? We talked a bit about how markets have changed and opportunity cost of input costs rather have increased over time, and really that has a direct impact on our ability to operate a cow-calf enterprise.
Now, to learn more about America's grazing lands, both private and public, and how you can get more involved at the state and national level to help preserve them for future generations, visit the National Grazing Lands Coalition website at grazinglands.org. Hey, by the way, during the Grazing Expo's Land and Legacy Banquet, Montana rancher and grazing lands champion Bob Lee was presented the Emeritus Board Member Award for his many years of service on the Montana GLCI and National Grazing Lands Coalition Steering Committee. Now, Bob has been a leader and a mentor for America's ranching industry since GLCI was founded in 1991 in Bozeman, Montana. Stay with us. We'll have more ag news right after this. It's time for one of America's premier sheep events. Join us in Miles City, Montana, September 10th and 11th for the 100th Annual Montana Ram Sale and 12th Annual Montana Ewe Sale. Montana Wool Grower members from across the state will bring rams and ewes to the Eastern Montana Fairgrounds for you to look through and bet on. You can also bet online at frontierlivesale.com. For more information, visit mtsheep.org or check out the Montana Wool Growers Association's Facebook page.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to... Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious... With multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Well, this week, the House is set to pass a 5-year reauthorization of USDA's Grain Inspection Program. The bipartisan U.S. Grain Standards Reauthorization Act includes some updates to the existing law, which expires on September 30th, that are aimed in part at promoting new technology. Now, they say the bill would require USDA to prioritize the adoption of improved grain grading technology to better enable the efficient, accurate and consistent grading of grain, and the legislation would exempt equipment and technology costs from a 30% cap on administrative and supervisory expenses that may be incurred under the existing law. Regardless, those in America's grain industry say the legislation is a must-pass bill for the entire grain value chain. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nemitz.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Okay, back to it here with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute. Just as we were going into that last break, we were talking about, you know, this email from Tom Burnett in Bozeman. Hey, look at how libraries have seen a decrease in people showing up at the libraries, yet look at the massive cost increase in these local libraries. And then, of course, you know, David Noble, we were talking about the fact that look at the flack that Yellowstone County commissioners took for just reducing funding for an art museum. Why does an art museum need taxpayer funds when taxpayers are being hammered with property taxes?
Yes. Well, this is why, from our point of view at Frontier Institute, we think that firm limits on the growth of government spending at the local level, but also at the state level and even the federal level, are so important. Because if you don't have a feeling on how fast you can grow the government, you don't have to make any hard decisions and trade-offs about what's the priority for funding for the government. And so, yeah, of course, if you don't have a limit, then everything's on the table and you can just, you know, hand out money to all your friends and pet projects. But if you're limited, then you actually have to make decisions about what does our city or county or state actually need.
That's right. Well, and that's a good tie-in now to the state budget debate here. I like the way that you summarized. I thought you did a very fair opening paragraph here to summarize the debate. And then, of course, you gave your perspective, a very reasoned perspective here. But Kendall Cotton has a guest opinion column I pulled up from the Billings Gazette. Taxpayers have received mixed messages since the legislative session about the growth of the state budget. Some lawmakers claim the budget grew spending less than 2%, far under the growth of inflation and in line with general metrics for fiscal responsibility. Other lawmakers have argued that this session, quote, blew up the budget with double-digit mega spending growth. And then Kendall writes, that is quite a contrasting view of our state's fiscal responsibility. So who's right here, Kendall?
So I explored that question in my piece that you cited there. And, you know, the folks who are saying that the state grew double digits are taking basically a conventional approach to measuring the growth of the state budget. They're looking at the top line of the budget, the growth of overall spending. And if you look at the legislative fiscal division's numbers and their reports, if you look at the top lines, yeah, they're correct. You know, we're looking at, you know, at least like 13% increase in the total overall growth of spending for this biennium compared to last biennium. So they're correct if you just look at the top line. But on the other hand, the folks who are saying that there has been only, you know, like 0.7% or less than 2% growth, they're using this official metric that's written into law called the biennial comparison. And that comparison is very narrowly only looking at appropriations, and it's excluding things like interfund transfers. So, for example, that would be like transfers from the general fund to new investment trust accounts like the GO Trust.
All right, so we'll hold it right there. Back in 60 seconds. Here with Kendall Cotton.
Real thing, you can still replicate the Auctioncraft style.
So you're like, saying, no, it does that spending this biennium. We're not even talking about what it does down the road. We're talking about this biennium right here, right now. All right, back to it here with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute, looking at the state budget here in Montana. And how much did the budget, how much did government spending at a state level actually go up following the legislative session? I've got two competing guest opinion in columns in front of me right now. I've got Kendall Cotton's piece addressing the state budget debate, and then also the Bozeman Daily Chronicle a while back had a guest opinion column from Representative Lou Jones out of Conrad. And so essentially, Kendall, you know, to break this down kind of simply along political lines for our listeners, basically you have the Freedom Caucus, more conservative members of the legislature arguing that, hey, look, we saw a massive increase in government spending in the last legislative session. And then you have Representative Lou Jones, who is the leader of the more moderate Republicans that have called themselves, you know, various names in the past, like the Solutions Caucus, etc. They're claiming, no, actually, the spending is much lower. In reality, that money that they're calling spending was set aside in basically a trust account. That money will be set aside and spent in the years and decades to come. So you can't argue that that's a spending increase in the next biennium. Is that a fair breakdown of kind of, you know, how the sides broke down, especially within the Republican caucus during the legislative session?
I think that's fair. And you know, I think that if you approach this from a technical perspective, both sides are technically right, depending on the metric that they're citing. And so my critique is that I think this biennial comparison metric that I think has been touted as, you know, the example, you know, that's where they get the numbers saying that the state only grew 0.7%. I think that's misleading. It's a misleading metric that masks the real scale of government that we saw this biennium. So here's a great example. If we use this biennial comparison methodology, next biennium, the state should like double our taxes, funnel all of that additional revenue into an investment account that's obligated for future spending on subsidized housing and childcare and infrastructure and whatever the state government wants. And the official biennial comparison methodology would register no growth in the budget because they factor out transfers to trust. And I think that's obviously wrong. And that's clearly not representing the burden of government accurately. So I think that we need to reassess the biennial comparison metric a little bit because its methodology is flawed.
Okay, more to follow coming up after this. And then in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll get back to business with the Big Sky Business Journal and your Montana business headlines, and then start our open phones portion of the morning in the 7 o'clock hour.
Riverside Contracting is now hiring.
Big topics, big ideas, Big Sky Montana Talks.
All right, back to it here with Kendall Cotton, the CEO of the Frontier Institute. So, you know, we were just talking about how he says, no, you very clearly have to account for all of this money being placed into this trust for future government spending. You have to count that as growth of government spending. Anyway, here's where we picked up, where we left off in that conversation.
Well, and also, if the idea, you know, from the more moderate Republicans is, well, we want to set this money. So the big picture here also is, okay, what has happened in Montana? Well, let's go back to the Trump tax cuts of 2018. The Trump tax cuts take effect. We get and I'll credit Lou Jones on this one. He came up with it, or he called it at the time, a Trump bump in revenues, right? So we cut taxes at the federal level. We got a bump in revenue at the state level because the Trump tax cuts boosted the economy. That led to more tax revenue, not less. So Montana got more revenue at the end of the day from the Trump tax cuts. Well, then let's fast forward to 2020. Governor Gianforte gets elected. You've got a first Republican governor in nearly two decades and a Republican legislature. And what do? They cut income taxes. Session one, session two, and now once again, session three. What happens? We get more revenue, not less revenue. Tax cuts are good for the people. It's our money anyway. That ends up fueling the economy. Then the government gets more revenue. But then what happens? They got more revenue. Now the fight begins to figure out a way to spend every single dime of that. And so that's the big picture of what's been taking place over the last few years. So the bottom line is, Helena has been awash in cash, and I think there's a lot of us that are out here saying, okay, look, we get it that we want to have bridges replaced and water projects funded and things like that, but that's why the legislature meets every other year to address those needs and to fund those needs. Why do we need to lock it all away and lock all of this money away in a trust account? Why not trust that money with we the people, and then you get more revenue 2 years from now to play with anyway?
That's right. You know, giving the money back to taxpayers via rebates, it's not categorically a bad idea. it's something that should be debated. You know, should we put the money into a trust account to save for the future? Should we give it back now and let people save and invest that money? That is a fair debate to have. And from, you know, I guess to kind of clarify things, we and, you know, myself personally, I'm absolutely not opposed to the state planning for the long term by responsibly saving and investing. I'm not arguing it shouldn't. I also don't think it's crazy to factor out, you know, some transfers to get an accurate picture of spending growth. But here's the deal. Putting money, additional taxpayer money in a new investment account that's obligated for future spending is growing government. That's what it is. It's misleading to claim that it's not. And we should represent the growth of state government fairly and then let the taxpayers decide whether that growth was a good investment. You know, whether they think that putting the money aside in that trust for specific spending priorities like housing and childcare and infrastructure, did we get a good deal or should we have gotten the money back in a rebate? Should we have just left a larger ending fund balance? I mean, these are all fair questions, but we have to represent it fairly. It is growing government. And so therefore, you know, the talking points that we're hearing from the more conservative side of things here, that there was double-digit growth in government this session, is far more accurate from my perspective.
Well, and that's the bingo moment of the whole hour right there, frankly, if you ask me, is, okay, so if you're the average everyday Montanan out there, you are fuming about property values and then subsequent property taxes. And so you're sitting back here saying, okay, wait a minute, they put all of this money, they had a surplus of our money, they took too much of our money in the first place. And granted, you know, great job by the legislature and the governor delivering more income tax relief, some property tax relief, but some people are going to see property tax increases. If you have a family cabin, second homes, possibly some ag increases. And I think for everyday Montanans, we kick back and we look at it and say, okay, you had all this money to set aside in this trust account. Why is anybody paying a dime more in property taxes, period? I just think that's the way people look at it, and it just piles on the frustration with the property tax system, whether people see individual relief or not. All right, we'll get Kendall's take on that and more, but I mentioned we're taking your phone calls. Let's get to our caller on the phone lines. We've got Ken in the Billings Heights. Ken, did you have a quick question or comment? Thanks for jumping in on the conversation.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. It was a good conversation. The thing I can understand is how can these radical governors, mayors, and senators and legislatures and everything else, and these phony judges, well, I don't know what the heck you want to call them, how can they dictate to the federal government that they're not going to comply in their state or their county or their city or anything else of what the federal government says? You know, to me, it sounds like they should be the same people as who they're protecting, so they should be taken care of just the same way if you're going to go into Chicago and get rid of all the crap.
So lawless leftist judges, lawless leftist mayors and governors, case in point, Illinois, for example, right? Okay, Kendall Cotton, yeah, tackle that one for us, because it's interesting that some of the same people that Ken just referenced there, you know, when the states actually have states' rights and the states actually have authority and the feds don't, that they're all about trampling on the states' rights. But now where you have a clear case of federal authority, especially on immigration issues, et cetera, well, all of a sudden they want to ignore the law in that particular issue.
Yes, but, you know, I think the point we made earlier about federal money not being free is exactly salient here, too. Federal money's not free, not even just from a financial point of view, but from a policy point of view. You know, all these federal grants flowing into the state that fund a lot of our state and local government programs, they come with strings attached. They come with requirements for auditing and reporting and matching funds and, you know, staff that the agencies have to staff up. And one of the scary things from my perspective is that I think there's very little oversight from the legislature on the federal grants coming into the state and what those grant terms are obligating the state to do and how they're dictating policy. So I've been looking at options for the state legislature to get their hands around this issue and start having more transparency. Because Aaron, I don't know if you know, but I mean, state bureaucrats can essentially go apply for federal grants like willy-nilly and obligate the state to grant terms without the legislature formally, officially having to sign off on that.
That's a great point. Yeah. Exactly what are you signing us up for here, and how do we, the people, rein that in? How does our own state elected officials rein that in? Oh, that's a very good point. Let's see. We've got less than a minute to go before the next break, and then we'll get to more calls after that. Kendall, Morgan and Helena messaged us on the Montana Talks app. Would you tell us again how to find the local budget info on your website?
Yes, you can go to frontierinstitute.org and go find our real local budget report. You can find it, I guess, directly at frontierinstitute.org/fiscal year 25 real local budget. You can just search on our website too and find it.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into the phone lines here. Actually, let me sneak a couple of messages in from the Montana Talks app here real quick. This is another random topic altogether, but Joe and Helena sent us a message on the app. Did you hear about the hedge fund that Baucus and Omar's husband are part of? What an odd couple. Yeah, Ilhan Omar and Max Baucus. What an odd couple, that's for sure. Yeah, for those of you who missed it, we covered that story earlier in the week. I think it was the Washington Free Beacon had this big piece where basically Max Baucus, the former Democrat senator from Montana who sold us out to the communist Chinese, apparently he's on the board of this $60 billion hedge fund now or something. He's got all these communist Chinese business ties now as well. But Ilhan Omar's husband, apparently she's no longer married to her brother. Apparently she's got a new husband now. She's the radical Islamic member of Congress from Minnesota. Her wealth skyrocketed 3,500% in just the last year. She's now worth $30 million, according to official disclosure forms. And her husband is getting money thanks to this firm that Max Baucus is on the advisory board of. I mean, for Pete's sake. All right, we also got a great message from Eric Moore in Miles City. We'll start there next.
Up on the right side. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
President Trump is now talking about a midterm election convention. I think it's a great idea, again, thinking out of the box. And he's calling for a 2026 pre-midterm convention, which will energize and, frankly, reinforce. I mean, he's moving so fast, but it's kind of hard for people to keep up. And heading into the fall next year, having, you know, fresh in your mind all of the things that they've accomplished, I think would be a good thing. Anyway, with the GOP victories, if we don't hold on to the House and Senate, it's going to be one impeachment after impeachment after impeachment.
From coast to coast, from sea to shining sea, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
When was the last time you bragged about your wireless company? Like, did you know my wireless company gave away 1,000 American flags to deserving veterans and forgave $10 million in veterans' debt? Did you know that my wireless company raised almost $500,000 to prevent vet suicide? In other words, when your wireless company is pure talk, there's a whole lot to brag about. You can even brag about the coverage you get. With Pure Talk, they use the same 5G network, the same cell towers as all the big carriers. And guess what? The average family saves over $1,000 a year. You can get unlimited talk and text, plenty of data, $25 a month. That's saving everybody a fortune. Make the switch. It's simple, fast, easy. Just dial #250, say the keyword, save now. Do it now. You save an additional 50% off your first month. That's #250, keyword save now from our friends at Pure Talk.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Democrats convened as a party for the first time recently since last fall's electoral bloodletting. Democrats must right their ship in 2026 and 2028. But the question is whether the party will still list to the left. Some Democrats are still pitching progressive ideas like packing the Supreme Court. President Trump isn't on the ballot in 2026, but midterm elections are almost always a referendum on the president and his performance. That's why Democrats are still targeting their favorite foil, President Trump. Tough subjects still expose fissures in the party. Democrats remain split over the Middle East crisis. The party rejected one resolution over the Middle East, sidestepping the issue of supplying weapons to Israel. The DNC finally approved a resolution authored by DNC Chairman Ken Martin demanding a ceasefire and supporting aid shipments. The DNC greenlighted the resolution, and then after adoption, Martin withdrew it. So much for clarity. Democrats must decide if they hold to liberal principles or tilt toward the right to attract moderate voters and Republicans who President Trump tapped for his coalition. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Again, most of the property taxes are driven at the local level, the city, county. That's why the Democrats that run Missoula, city, county combined, have raised property taxes on their people over 20% in just the last couple of years alone. But meanwhile, Flathead's Republican county commissioners are lowering property taxes for their people. In Butte, it's kind of a mixed bag. They're lowering property taxes for in their latest budget, but some are still getting hikes, which makes you wonder, why are some being, you know, getting hikes? Nobody should be getting hikes right now, frankly.
Yep. Jeff, you know, so to speak to the, like, kind of savings discussion that was from a caller, you know, my view is this. After fully funding, like, a limited government, a government that does only the necessary things that our founders intended, the state local government should be setting aside in savings or investments only the minimum of what they need to ensure long-term fiscal stability and no more. So anything beyond that, I think, needs to be directly returned back to taxpayers because trade-offs matter. No one spends your money as well as you. That was Milton Friedman's great insight. And so the government savings is exactly the opposite. It's taxpayer dis-saving. And I think there's a lot of problems and risk when the government holds money and you don't.
Yeah, great point. Well, I think there's also a conversation to be had here about more government reform at the local level as well. You know, in fact, one story I need to write for our Montana Talks website, you know, there's a couple of strong women running for mayor for a couple of our bigger towns here in Montana. Keisa Davison in Kalispell, a business owner. I've heard great things. I spoke with her. You've got Jennifer Owen in Billings, who is very sharp. I've known her for a number of years. You know, but even if you get a good, strong mayor like Jennifer Owen or Keisa Davison elected in Kalispell, well, if you still have a liberal mob rule on the city council itself, a lot of these mayoral positions are just kind of figurehead type positions. And so maybe we need to look at having, you know, mayors that actually have a little bit more authority and power to actually, you know, be elected to actually run these cities and towns. Anyway, we'll get Kendall's take on that and more, but let's get to the phone calls here. I think, let's see, I know we've got a caller on the line. It's either Greg Franks in Billings or Rod in the Flathead. Who do we got?
It's Greg Franks.
Hey, good. Okay, I knew you were first up, but I wasn't sure if we got you transferred over right or not. Greg, great to hear from you. What's going on?
Hey, you and I have talked about this before, but I wanted to hear Kendall's perspective on this. Most of the bulk of our property tax dollars going to school districts and local municipalities and counties. How could we orchestrate a DOGE-style audit of those facilities and get a full accounting of where those dollars are going and giving that exposure to the voters so they can see the waste, fraud, and abuse that municipalities and school districts are spending their money?
Great question, Greg. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Kendall, your thoughts?
I think we should do it. Absolutely. I think we should have a Doge-style investigation from top to bottom, from the locals all the way up to state, even at the federal level, too, of waste, fraud, and abuse. But, you know, one of the things I've told a lot of folks that I've talked to people about property taxes and local budgets, the growth of local governments, is that's one of the ways that these politicians get you as an average citizen. If they try and drag you down into the weeds and say, oh, well, we can't live without this particular spending. This is so essential. And they try and obscure the fact that they're spending excessively. And so what I recommend to taxpayers, average citizens, is go to these city county budget meetings, go to your school board meeting, go and look at the overall growth in spending. See how it measures up to fiscally responsible measures like population and inflation. And if it's growing beyond that, your question to the local leader should be why?
All right. Great message there from Kendall Cotton. By the way, Eric Moore in Miles City says this. It has to start at the appropriation level. Government is a beast. The only way to control it is to starve it. All right. Back to business coming up at 7 o'clock.
A major milestone for clean energy aviation hit recently. A solar-powered drone called Skydweller was in the air for 73 hours without needing to land to fuel. It's a joint collaboration between the Navy and Skydweller Aero. The testing happened in Mississippi under the leadership of the Naval Air Warfare Center Aircraft Division. One of the biggest hurdles of the three-day test flight was storing enough energy during daylight so the drone could continue flying throughout the night. Engineers said it also handled real-time autonomous decisions like adapting to turbulent weather and keeping up secure communications. Skydweller only logged 220 flight hours during the test, but engineers think it would be possible to stay in the air for much longer than the 73-hour test. Possibly, even for weeks at a time. Kristen Goodwin, Fox News.